Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, Maddie Ulm, registered dietitian and former professional runner. Today's guest is Emily Infeld. Emily is a professional runner for Brooks, and she actually just made the U.S. team in the 10K after winning the 2025 USATF Outdoor Championships. Emily is a 14-time All-American while she was at Georgetown, and she was also the indoor NCAA 3K champion. Emily is a 7-time member of Team USA. She's the 2015 bronze medalist at the World Champs in Beijing in the 10K. She's a 2016 Olympian in the 10K, the 2018 U.S. cross-country champion, and most recently, the 10K U.S. champ. I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Emily. All right, Emily, welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast. You are fresh off of your U.S. champs win in the 10K. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's great to see you. And I'm just excited to be here and to chat.
Yes, and you and I have had so many conversations over the years about the importance of nutrition and just bringing more awareness to the topic. So I think listeners are going to learn so much from you today.
Yeah, well, obviously, I don't have your expertise, but I have, I see a lot of stuff that in the sport, I feel like we could improve upon. And I'm like, I just also have made some mistakes. So I'm like, I never want people to make mistakes I have. And I'm like, if I've learned things, I'm like, I want to share them. And I'm like, it's great to have someone like you who actually is, has like a degree, and not just me saying it. So it's like nice to have that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what this podcast is for, to help other athletes learn from athletes' mistakes. And like you said, it happens. We learn from our mistakes, and it's helpful to share those experiences. So I'm really excited to get into your story. And I'd love to just kind of start by having you tell us about how you got into running. What was your first experience with running?
When I was little, like I had so much energy. I'm like, my parents put me in all sorts of sports just because I had a lot of energy. Me and both my sisters, they were like, okay, what can we get these kids to do to like get their wiggles out, get their energies out? And I was like an early bird compared to my sisters. So my dad would do these local road races, and I would get up and I'd be like, I want to come. So I think the first one I remember doing was like, I was probably like 7 or 8, and it was like a mile that started at Rascal House, which was like our like local Pizza Hut. And it was at like 7 a.m. and you run like ran a mile and you finished and you got a bunch of pop and pizza. And I was like, oh my God, this was so fun. I got to like run as hard as I could. And then like, it's like 7 a.m. and I'm eating pizza and pop. My dad was like, you're allowed to do this. You just did your exercise. I was like, okay, perfect. Yay. I was like, mom, like my mom would never let me have pop this early. So I was like, this is fun. This is what happens when you get to do these races and you get a little finisher medal. So I had a blast. I'm like, I feel like I've always, in every sport I've done, I've loved the running aspect. Like I did basketball, soccer, even like softball. Like I like to run around the bases. I like to run across the field. I don't have hand-eye coordination. But I'm like, I like that part of it. And I like the team, like I like the team part of sport. So I feel like I really fell into running through other sports I've done, and then had some special moments with my dad doing these like random road races, like locally around Cleveland when I was young. Not all the time. I would do like little triathlons and biathlons and whatever was available. So it was fun. It was like a nice introduction to the sport. And I love just like the road race community, and the energy was always fun. There was lots of vendors and you got freebies. And I feel like most little kids love freebies. So I'd be like, cool, I get this fun little bracelet that's trash, but it's fun.
For sure. That's so fun that you had like a fun intro to running, that it was something that you just enjoyed. And that's the most Midwest thing I've heard, is getting pop at 7 a.m. That's so cute.
Yes, totally.
I love it. So when did you decide that running is something you might be good at? When did you decide to kind of focus a little more on running?
Oh, I mean, I was always someone who I really liked running, like more than probably my other sisters. When I was in like fourth grade, you dressed up as who you wanted to be when you grew up. And I was like, I want to be an Olympic runner. Like I was like, I want to be a 100-meter champion. Like, I don't know why that was what I wanted to be, but I was like, that looks fun. But it's not like I trained hard then. I just always was like, I saw that and I was like, I want to be an Olympian. Like, I thought that seemed like the coolest thing. I saw these women who like looked fabulous in these cool outfits, and they had like these long nails that looked beautiful. And I have like the shortest nails ever, but I'm like, I just thought it looked really fun. And to push your body. So I'm like, I think from a young age, I aspired to do that. And probably not until like high school, college, and high school, I didn't even take it. I don't want to say it was serious, but I'm like, I did it cross country and track. And then we had indoor track, I think, starting my junior year. So I did it most year round. And I was pretty good at it. So I feel like that's when I was like, oh, I'm pretty good. I think I want to run in college. And then when I was in college, I was like, oh, I'd love to keep running if I got the opportunity. So I'm like, I feel like it was kind of organic and natural. And I was lucky that I had coaches who weren't pushing me to like try to squeeze every last ounce of me out of myself in high school or college. I feel like I had coaches who saw the longevity of it, looked at me and were like, you're a 15-year-old girl. You're going to run 5 days a week and you're not going to do crazy stuff. So I'm like, I feel really lucky that I had that, because I think for me that would have put too much pressure to have it feel like it was, I had to be a professional at that age. I'm like, for me, it was really nice that it was still fun. I got to push myself. I got to be good at it, but I got to hang out with my friends. I got to still have like, we had pasta parties or pizza parties the night before races. Like, that part was really fun. And I think, yeah, as I got older, I still love it. Like, that's mostly why I'm doing it. So I feel lucky that I've had, I think, good examples a lot of my career.
Yeah, for sure. I can definitely relate to that. Just kind of starting out with like, I was very fortunate to have coaches that were very supportive of taking rest. And yeah, in high school, I would run 5 days a week, maybe sometimes less, sometimes a little more. But my coach really recognized the importance of longevity in the sport, and recognizing that when you're a teen athlete, you're growing, your body is shifting. Like, those are important things to allow to happen. And I feel like today what I see in social media is high schoolers, like you said, are kind of training like professional or even collegiate runners. They're running so much. And with Strava, there's just so much comparison. And I've talked to a couple other guests about this before, but just looking at you and the longevity you've had in the sport, is there any advice that you could give to a young runner that maybe feels behind?
Yeah. I mean, well, I'm like, want to touch on your piece about comparison. I'm like, I do feel like we were so lucky that we didn't have social media. We didn't, yes. There was no, like, I just knew what I was doing, and like, it didn't matter what anyone else was doing. I had no idea. And I just went to my meets in my state. And like, I would go to like, maybe once a year I'd go to a national meet or something, or like I went to Penn Relays once just cause it was like a close state, but I had no idea. Like, I didn't know like really the other big runners. Like, I didn't know, like, it just wasn't part of our culture. And I'm like, I do feel a little sad. Like, I think there's so much good stuff that comes out of social media and other things, but I'm like, oh man, these kids, like, I just, I'm like, you can't just let yourself be yourself. And you're looking at these people who you feel like, I need, like, someone, so-and-so is running 80 miles a week in California, and now so I should be doing that too. And I think for me, it's easier said than done, but I would give the advice of just focus on your own self. Don't look at anyone else, and don't try to replicate someone else. I'm like, I think too, I feel like that in the sport sometimes, and to talk about body issues, I'm like, or body types, everyone has a different body type. And I'm like, sometimes I feel like there's a message of like, this person looks like a runner. And it's like, no, we all look like runners. Our body is going to find whatever that equilibrium is. If we're eating, resting, recovering, training hard, we're going to get to that limit. So I think I would say try not to compare to anyone else and what their training is and what they look like, because everyone is different and there is no one body type and there is no one training method. And I also think if you're young, I'm like, you have so much time in the sport. I think you feel sometimes when you're 15 years old and you're like, how am I 10 seconds behind the girl who's winning or whatever? And it's like, you have so much time to catch up to that. And I think it's trying to not take any shortcuts, but just to let your body accumulate the training over time and to know that your body will ebb and flow also, like to your point, when you're growing and changing and going through puberty, and there's so many other factors. And I just think consistency is the most important thing in this sport, and loving it and just treating your body in a way where you want to be doing this forever and ever, and you want to be loving it. And I think sometimes if you try to take shortcuts, you stop loving it and your body will fight you, and that's not a fun place to be.
Yes, for sure. Just letting it happen and not trying to force anything, I think, is really good advice. And focusing on yourself, obviously, like we've said, easier said than done, but it really doesn't matter what other people are doing. The mileage somebody else is running does not determine your fitness, and how somebody else looks does not determine what your body is going to look like. You know, it's hard not to compare, but it really holds no merit in determining your personal success in the sport. And it's amazing that you have been able to kind of figure that out and allow your body to do what it needs to do. And I'm curious, thinking back to high school, was that anything that you ever struggled with? Like when your body shifted, did you ever struggle with body image in high school or even fueling in high school?
I honestly, I didn't. Like, I feel really lucky. I feel like my high school and college, I've always had strong legs. Like, I've always, and I think for me, I was running mostly, I ran the mile, but like the 800, I would be on the 4x4. I would do the 200 sometimes. I was running cross country. But I think I just wanted to get faster, and I didn't really look at myself as anything other. I mean, aside from this is like, I think the only thing I wished is that I didn't ever have boobs. And I like,
classic runner problem.
I was like, man. So I think actually like the one thing I did in high school, I like read some article that Tyra Banks wrote that she like had peanut butter ice cream smoothies, and all of a sudden she like turned into a Victoria's Secret model. So I was like going home being like, if I do that, I'm gonna look like that. And then I was just like, I mean, whatever, I ate what I wanted. And I felt lucky my coach was such a proponent of, he was like, you guys gotta fuel, you gotta eat a lot, and was like hounding us with that, made sure we had snacks after practice. Like, it was such good messaging for young kids. So I was like, my parents were big on that. They were like, I was hungry all the time. I think I was voted like most athletic / hungriest for my like high school superlative because I was always eating. But I feel like I was someone who like, I love food. I'm like, I eat to live. Is that what it is? I eat to live instead of live to repeat. I don't know, whatever. I like to eat. So I'm lucky I didn't have that. And I just think too, I'm like, I was having success. So I also think that was helpful, is that like, I was having success. My body was what it was, and I was getting faster each year. So I think that to me gave me positive reinforcement that like, I was growing, I was changing. My body maybe looked differently, but I don't know. I'm like, I always kind of had strong legs, and I'm like, my body is what it was. And I luckily didn't really get sucked into that. And even in college, I had a really, really good culture with that. I think the first time I maybe had some issues with how I looked was when I was a pro, and I felt like I didn't look like other people on the start line. I had people starting to tell me I didn't look a certain way. And I think that messaging got in my head and made me think, oh no, I'm not trying hard enough. Like, I need to try harder. And I think I'm so lucky that I was able to get through my high school and college without that. And then I feel like I started to have some of that messaging. And it's tough because I think most women, and I don't want to say men don't get it as well, but I think it's specifically for women and girls, you're going to get that messaging at some point, whether it's high school, college, or later. And I'm like, I want that messaging to be done. Like, I want that, like, of you don't look like a runner, and like, you're whatever it is. I'm like, that should not be in the sport. And I think that, to me, that first year was probably the only year I've ever had issues with eating. And I was not intentionally trying to lose weight, but I was intentionally trying to eat healthy and really clean. And that was like a lesson that I learned after I had 2 sacral stress fractures, that no, actually eating really healthy and clean isn't healthy. Like, that's not right. What we should be doing.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, that's such an important distinction. And I say this all the time, but like, healthy doesn't always equal fueled. Like, eating healthy doesn't always mean you're actually fueling your body. And it's hard because I think in our minds and in what we're taught in school and health class and things, like, those things are mutually exclusive, and they're really not. So that's a hard lesson to learn. But I love that you were able to just focus on your body. I like that you said you had strong legs. You know, I think it's so important to see the positive aspects of your body and what you're grateful for that your body can do for you, and not focusing so much on what you wish you looked like or what you don't look like. And it sounds like that was really protective for you going through high school. You were able to go on to college, and you were a 14-time All-American at Georgetown, which is incredible. What was your transition like from high school into college?
Oh, I felt like it was pretty smooth. Like, I feel really lucky. My college coach was wonderful. He was so passionate about it. It's so funny because I think he was 27 when he was recruiting me, which, wow, like, looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, he was so young. Yeah. But like, at that time I was like, oh, whoa, he's so like, so old. Cause I'm like 17 or 18. I'm like, he's so young. What am I talking about? Like, looking back, I'm like, that's crazy. But I feel like he had such maturity. He had such passion for the sport. But the first thing he said to me my freshman year is, he's like, I want you to be getting better and better each year. And I want you to be getting better 10 years after you've graduated. He's like, I want to make sure we don't do too much too soon, because I think he was looking at other like high school phenoms who were coming into college. And he said this, he was like, I don't think you're going to be All-American your freshman year in cross country. But he's like, I think a lot of those girls that are going to be All-American and top 10 may never have it again. And he's like, I don't want that to happen to you. I would rather you be getting better each year than me trying to push you too hard this year. And he was really gentle with my freshman year, especially. I'm like, I feel really thankful for that. I'm like, I had positive momentum. I was excited about practice. I felt like I was getting better, but it wasn't anything crazy. It's not like he really looked at what I was doing in high school and he was like, you don't run many miles. We're not going to give you a lot more miles. You don't run long workouts. Your long runs, the longest you ever run is 8 miles. We're not going to now give you a 90-minute run. He was like, we're going to run 9 miles. And so to me, it was just really nice because it was a natural progression. And I think the longest I ever ran by my senior year in college was 80 minutes. Like that was my longest run ever. And I'm like, that's fine. And like, I was second in cross country with that. Like I was second in the 5K and the 15. Like, I just, I'm like, I don't, again, everyone is different and we're all coming from a different place. But for me, he was like, the most we're going to increase your mileage is 5 miles a year. He's like, I just don't think we need to do any more than that. And like, we'll let the workouts be according, like, I kind of increased accordingly, but he's like, you also have school and all these other things. And like, he just wanted to make sure that I stayed healthy and consistent. So I'm really grateful for that because I really didn't have any injuries in college. I felt like it was really smooth. I felt like there was a really good culture and just like a, I don't know, we're also in college. Like you want to have fun. You want to have late night pizza sometimes. Like, I don't know. You don't want to feel like you can't do the things that you want to do as a college athlete. And I'm like, I feel really lucky. I feel like I had a really great college experience. I ran well. I have like made some of the best friends that are still best friends in my life right now, which is really, really fun. And just like his approach and that it was, not trying to force me into really doing something drastic when I got there, but just very gentle.
That's amazing. I got chills hearing that story. I feel like I wish coaches were like that across the board. I mean, just so many things that you said hit the nail on the head, like thinking about the phenoms, the high school phenoms. Unfortunately, that is the case. A lot of times they shine really bright and then really struggle with that injury cycle, which we'll definitely get into some of like the reds aspect and underfueling aspect. But recognizing that and not trying to push immediate success and needing you to immediately be an All-American or the best on the team is such an important mindset, I think, for young runners to have, and understanding it's not about one season. It's the long term. You're thinking long term. And it sounds like your experience in college was great, but unfortunately unique. I don't really hear those kinds of stories a lot. And so I think, hearing what he said to you when you sat down with him, if you're a parent of an athlete interested in running in college, or if you're listening and interested in running in college, ask questions that, give you answers like what Emily just talked about. Like, ask what their plan is for you and make sure that it's somebody who's supporting the whole athlete and not just that immediate success. And I'm curious, Emily, if you have anything to add to that for just advice to give athletes that are interested in running in college, maybe what questions they could ask or how they can make sure their environment's going to help them succeed.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a piece of that is wanting to feel like you're still part of the team, even if they're not trying to have you like be the number one or like even on the cross country roster or whatever that is. Cause I'm like, I think that there's a place for everyone on the team. And it's like, I don't know. And I feel like, especially most college kids getting recruited, you're like used to being kind of winning races at the top of the top. And it's shocking when you go to college and you're like, I'm not going to be winning all the time. And I think for you to have that mindset, and I mean, just to make sure that the coach has a long-term approach and that they're also still like, you're still part of the team. You're still contributing, even if you don't make the top 7 cross country or whatever it is. And it's like, because we want you here for these 4 years or 5 years or whatever it is. And I think that is important. And that's something I saw from him, is he was like, I don't expect you to be even making cross country this year. Like I feel like gave me such manageable goals. And then when I was able to hit those goals, like I finished 60th my freshman year at cross country. And he was like, it's amazing you made it. Like, that's huge. That's a great goal. And like, we're going to see what we can do from here. And he never, I think, jumped the gun and was like, you are going to be winning or this or that. He took such a step-by-step approach. And to me, that helped because it was really positive momentum. And it didn't feel like I got overwhelmed or I felt like I was failing. It felt like we were in it together. We had this long-term approach and mindset, and that he wanted me to get to these goals. He's like, I think you can be really good, but I think we need to focus on kind of just right now. We don't need to jump ahead 4 years, 5 years, 10 years from now. He's like, I want you to be feeling good, strong, successful, still loving it at that point. But I want right now us to feel like we're just taking incremental steps. And I think that to me was nice. And just hearing him, that mileage piece for me was really nice, that he was like, let me see your logs. Like, what's the highest you've ever done? And he's like, okay, the most we're going to do this first year, like, you've only run 40 miles. The most we're going to do is 45. And then he was like, each year, the most I'm going to give you is maybe 5 miles more than that. And that to me was really manageable. And just me saying, he's like, what's the longest you ever run? And I was like, I feel like I was also fibbing. I was like, I feel like I do like 8 all the time. And he was like, do you? And he's like, because on these logs, it looks like you do a lot of 6. And, and I'm like, okay. And he's like, we will start with 8. And then we might get to 9. And then like, whatever it is. And I think that for me is someone too, who just, he's like, we don't need to be also progressing everything right away. Like, let's see how you're handling like just the workouts with the team and keeping your mileage the same, keeping the long run the same. And then if you feel like you're feeling recovered, you're feeling good, you feel like you can manage your studies, I think that too, someone who understands that as a college athlete, running is just part of it. But like he said to me too, he's like, in college you have like college athletics, you have running, you have school, and you have friends. And he's like, those are the three things. And like, you can't be 100% of all of those. So he's like, you kind of have to pick and choose. And he's like, it might be a time where you're picking and choosing one over the other. But he's like, I want you to not get into this state where you're trying to do all at the same time. Cause he's like, you are going to burn yourself out in that. And then like, that's not going to help no one. So anyways, I'm like, I think that was good. It was healthy. And, I don't know. I also think like you kind of get a vibe from the coach and the team culture, but I'm just talking on tangents now, but I would ask a lot of questions, I guess, mostly on how they would take what you've been doing and kind of progress that in a natural way. And I would look for answers of, if they're like, you're running 50, we'll start you now at 80. And it's like, that would be a red flag. I'd be like, that doesn't seem like that's reasonable.
Yes.
Or if they're like, the team, everyone runs 90 minute long runs. And you're like, the longest I've done is 50. And it would be like, is there wiggle room? I think hopefully there would be, and hopefully there would be some individualization. And it's not just like, this is what the team does, this is what you're going to do. Cause I do think, yes, maybe someone in high school, their long run had been 90 minutes. So they're going to keep doing 90. But if yours was only 50, like, you shouldn't be jumping to 90. So I think letting them know that like, you are who you are and that you want that individualization.
Yeah, that's such great advice. And I love how you said that you're important on the team no matter what you're doing with your racing. That was always huge to me. It's already hard when you get to college because it is such a different playing field. I was the slowest one on the CU team for the entire first year I was there, but they would put up a document every day with everyone's workout and my name was always on there. I knew the coach was at least thinking about me once a day. So knowing that you're valuable outside of your performance and that you're still going to be, you know, given workouts and talked to by the coaches, even if you're not on the varsity team, I think is also an important point to bring up. You know, how do you treat athletes, or what do you do for athletes who aren't traveling when they race or things like that? Just making sure that you give yourself room for growth and know that it may not happen right away, but that you can get there.
Yes. Totally. Yeah. I love that. And I don't know. I think what makes a great coach is someone who, it's really easy to be a good coach when everything's going well and you have this person who's just running the best, but it's harder to be a really good coach when you have someone who maybe is struggling or who isn't like, who is not the top on the team or whatever it may be. So I'm like, I love that. And I love that you had that. Cause I'm like, I think that's so important because we all add so much. Every person on the team is adding value. And I'm like, I feel like there's been so many stories of people who, like, Phoebe Wright was like a walk-on and then ends up like, I'm just being like a phenom. Like, I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, you just never know. And you want a coach who looks at you and is like, I'm going to get the most out of you, whatever that is. And again, it's whatever it is for you. And that's great. And like, seeing that progress, but feeling that value is so important.
Yes, it absolutely is. And it sounds like it gave you a really solid foundation to go on from college and run professionally. So you signed a contract with Nike right out of college, right? And you joined Bowerman. What was that transition like for you?
Well, I mean, it was, I feel like for me, I was really excited. Like, I was so excited to have a pro contract. I'm like, this is crazy. I feel like it wasn't happening all the time. Like, it's not like everyone was signing pro contracts out of college. So I knew, I was like, there's lots of good people who aren't signing contracts. Like, I felt really lucky and excited. I was training with Shalane and Kara, who were like my two idols. And I was like, I can't believe I'm training with them. Like, this is crazy. And there was like a good group of us, like Chris Derrick, Elliot, Heath, German Fernandez, I don't know. I just felt like we had a good kind of class coming in at the same time, which was really fun. But it was hard. I feel like for me, I lived in a house with seven other girls in college. Like, I had a lot of friends, and it was different being on. Sometimes I was on the same schedule as Shalane and Kara, but I also had like a 8-week altitude camp with just the boys, and they are wonderful and so great, but I definitely am like a girl's girl. Like, I think I got a little lonely. It was different for me. I'm like also introverted if you don't know me, and if I don't know people, I'm like a little shyer. And I also was running with the boys every day and think I fried myself because so we're running way too fast. So there was a lot of factors that went in. And I think I was getting some messaging, which this is, I'm like, it's a bummer and unfortunate from people and like tertiary people around, but people talking about my body. I had someone who, this is like so bizarre, send me some like let's run thread about how I would never be good as a pro because I was too big. And I was also like, person who sent this to me, I would have never seen this. Why did you send this to me? But I think that got in my head a little. And I also, in college, I went out and I had late night pizza, and I was trying to stop, like, squash those habits because I was like, I'm a pro. I have to like get rid of this stuff. If I want to get the most out of myself, I need to be doing like X, Y, like I need to be doing absolutely everything. And I think for me, that didn't help with my feelings of like loneliness and isolation, was me not fueling enough. And like, I look back now and it's like, I thought I was like, but I'm eating 3 meals a day and I have a snack after I work out. But it's like, no, I wasn't. I was like cutting out most, like, I don't know. I went from college and I would eat like pizza and ice cream and I would have beer and stuff. And I'm like, I just felt like I needed to cut all that out. And I was like, but I'm eating well, but like I'm having a couple pieces of toast for breakfast. And then I have like scrambled eggs, but I don't like, sometimes it would be like 2 egg whites and 1 egg yolk. And I'm like, why did I feel like I couldn't eat the egg yolks? Like, just stuff like that, where it's like little things that I was tweaking, thinking it was going to make me better as an athlete. And instead I'm like, I do think sometimes women have reinforcement. If you get thin, you're not, or you're running really well. And then you have this in your head that like, this is what my body needs to run well. I luckily was running really poorly. Like, I was trying to run the mile and I was running slower than I was in high school. So I was like, it made me realize, I was like, there's something wrong with me. And I went home and my parents were like, oh my gosh, you look awful. Like, what are you doing? And I was like, I honestly was like, I didn't even think I was doing anything intentionally. And I talked to Michelle Tegenkamp, who was, she's fabulous. She's a nutritionist. She's wonderful. And we kind of sat down and looked at stuff. And it was, again, sometimes it's not like 100% intentional. I wasn't skipping meals, but I was looking back. I was restricting certain foods because I thought I needed to. And I thought that I was like, I want my body to look like these women who are in their 30s and marathon runners. And I'm like, it just made me like, now again, I'm like, never look at someone else and try to make your body their body, because they took like a decade to get there. And like, I just, I'm like, there is also, my body is my body, and like, my body will look however it looks. I should never try to make it look like someone else. So I think for me, I was looking at the wrong things and thinking I needed to be a certain way. And it really had me struggle. My mental health was struggling. I'm like, my physical health clearly struggling. So I don't know. I look back at that and I'm like, I was running more than I ever had. I was training at altitude. So things where I should have been fueling more than I ever had, and instead I was fueling less than I ever had. And it's looking at that, it's like, man, it seems so simple. And it's like, why was I doing that? But it's like, you don't know. Like, at the time too, I'm like, I want to be the best I can. And I just wasn't being as intentional about that. And looking back at how much I eat now, and I'm like, yeah, when you're training hard at sea level, but especially when you're at altitude and you've never been, like, I'm just like, man, you got to be like extra careful. Like, you got to add extra fuel. So it's like, I'm so happy that there's more research coming out on all that. Cause it's like, I just felt like I didn't know. And I was so naive for so long, and it helped me in my running. And then I think I was naive in a way where I just wasn't looking at what I was doing to my body and how I should be increasing what I had been doing in college. And instead I'm like, I need to be healthy and I need to eat clean. And yeah, anyway, so it made it a hard transition.
Yes, for sure. And I feel like that's, you know, that's an important thing to highlight, is that you can end up underfueled unintentionally. Most of the time, it is unintentional. It starts out with this goal of just being healthier. You know, obviously we in our minds make that connection. Oh, a pro runner doesn't drink beer and eat pizza and have ice cream. So of course those are things I need to cut out. And it's so funny, I've said this before, but our minds automatically go to what should I cut out to get better? Mm-hmm. And they don't go to what should I add in or what should I adjust to be better, not to fully remove from your diet to get better.
Yes, totally. No. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know. It's easy to have it happen, but it is, I think most people, to your point, I'm like, it's unintentional. And it's like, you don't realize what you're doing until it's too far gone. And it's like, that's why I'm like, no, we need to make it like normal that it's like, no, like we need to talk about this to stop people from having it be unintentional. That it's like, sometimes you don't want to, I think it's hard because I'm like, there's this messaging where it's like, you don't want to be like tracking your calories all the time. But it's like, I also think sometimes it's just making sure like, if you're at like altitude and your appetite gets suppressed, that you're like, I need to be fueling. Like I need to make sure I'm getting in these carbs, these macros, whatever it is. And like, sometimes it's in and out. Like sometimes we get in and out because it's like, we know we need the fuel. That's what I'm craving. I feel like I want the red meat. I want extra French fries because I know I need more carbs. And like, whatever it is, you got a big lemonade, like something that makes me also feel happy. And I'm like, okay, now I'm happy. And like, I'm running better than I ever have been. And I'm like, I think because I'm not so hyper-focused on like, I can't have pizza or I can't have this. It's like, no, all of this is so good. And when you're training hard, it's like, you shouldn't matter about like, I don't know. I feel like I used to be like, I need to eat more veggies. And I'm like, veggies are great. It's good. But it's hard to get in that many calories when you're eating only veggies.
Yes, absolutely. I say that all the time. Runners tend to overeat veggies and it's at the expense of everything else that's actually going to help you fuel. Sports nutrition is kind of counterintuitive. It's not general population nutrition where, yes, maybe general population could add more veggies in. This situation, it's different. Your goals are different. You're asking different things of your body. So of course your fueling should look different. And it sounds to me like you also noticed mental health was a huge piece of fueling. And that's something I also try to remind athletes. Yes, food is fuel, but it's also an opportunity for happiness and joy and connection. And like for you, thinking back to the beginning, your career started with pizza. It started with Poppin' Pizza. So of course that was hard to cut those things out. And it sounds like you're happier when you have those foods in that you enjoy.
Yes, totally. And I'm like, I do think there's something that I thought when I became a pro that I had to make sacrifices to be good. And I had that in my mind that I was like, if I'm not sacrificing all these things, I'm not trying hard enough. And I'm looking back and I'm like, why? Because again, I love running. I want to get the most out of myself, but it's one piece of who I am. Why do I want to sacrifice the rest of my life for this one thing? And I'm like, I also think then you put this on yourself as you're only a runner, you're only this, and like everything is around it. So then when things aren't going well, it's like, of course your mental health is going to struggle. Of course you're going to feel like you have nothing. And I'm like, if you surround yourself with other things and say, yes, I want to get the most out of myself, this is one piece of me, to get the most out of myself, I need to be happy, I need to be healthy, I need to be fueled, I don't need to be sacrificing all these things that make me happy. Because again, it's like, it's not really worth it at that point.
Yes, absolutely. And it doesn't help with performance. At the end of the day, it really doesn't. And you know, like you alluded to earlier, unfortunately, some athletes do experience an initial performance improvement, which makes it really confusing. So, you know, like you said, luckily I didn't, like obviously not luckily, but I mean, it's good that you didn't end up getting kind of cross signals there. And, you know, I think going back to what initially kicked this off was having people comment on your body, which is so hard. And I think, you know, all athletes are kind of subject to that. But I do feel like especially female athletes are going to notice more commentary on your body. You're too strong, you're too skinny, you're, you know, there's no winning. There's always going to be something someone's going to say. So knowing what you know now, how would you recommend another athlete handle comments about their body? Do you have any advice for how to kind of let that roll off without necessarily impacting how you're approaching fueling or training?
Oh, I mean, it's hard. I'm like, it's tough because I'm like, I'm 35. So I'm like, I just think the older you get, the like less that stuff bothers you. But I know when you're young and you see that, it's really easy to feel like that's your value. And someone is saying that you're not valuable because you don't look how you should. But to your point, it's like, there is no winning. Like I've seen like Ailish McLaughlin gets comments on how she's too skinny and other people get comments on how they're too big. Like there is no perfect. And I think it's realizing that. And that also whoever is leaving those comments is clearly unhappy. And I'm like, I'm I'm a big proponent of like, there's some random troll, block them. Like, delete that comment, block them. You don't need to see it. Like, I just am like, don't think about it for one other second. Like, just try to, if you see it, quick delete, get it gone, block that person. Cause I'm like, they're not a happy person. And if they're trying to drag you down, I'm like, you don't need that in your life. And just to keep surrounding yourself with good people. And I'm like, I think that when you have good people around you, and like, that's why I'm lucky. I'm like, my husband is with me almost every day. And I feel lucky for that. Cause I'm like, he always keeps me in check. And I'm like, I feel like I know he loves me regardless of how I'm performing, how I look, like whatever it is, like he loves me for me. And it's not like he likes me because I'm winning this, or he likes me because my body looks like this or whatever. Like, he just likes that I'm happy. And I'm like, if you have people who you feel like they support you, you support them. I don't want to say it's like make your circle smaller. I think it's just like keep some people at arm's length. Like, I also think there's sometimes when you have to realize that like in this sport, like not everyone, you don't have to tell everyone all your secrets. You don't have to feel like you need to confide in everyone. I think keep people around you who you feel like support you and are there for you. And I'm like, again, if there's someone who's a troll, someone you don't know, just get them gone. Don't think about them.
Yes, for sure. And like you said, it's usually coming from their own insecurities, their own problems. It's not actually about you. It's about them. And so just trying to remember that. Delete the comment. Get out of there. You know, don't pay any mind or give it another second of your energy, your thought, because it doesn't matter. Like you said, there's no winning in those situations. And that's a hard thing just in general to navigate throughout careers. And I think injuries can be another time that can be really exposing in terms of struggling with shifts and changes. And you've shared that you've gone through several pretty intense injuries. You said earlier you had a sacral stress fracture. I know you've been through hip surgeries and all of these things. So tell us a little bit about your kind of injury cycle. Is there anything that you feel contributed to that, or anything that you would do differently knowing what you know now?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think I got two sacral stress fractures. I had one on the left side and then I got one on the right side like a year later. And I know those are from underfueling. Like, I know they didn't show up immediately, but I was probably underfueling from like, I don't know, probably from when I was pro for like, 7 or 8 months. And I'm like, and then I kind of took a reset. I went home, I actually gained some weight, and then I got back into heavy training, and then I got a sacral stress fracture. And I'm like, I really don't think it was for me, my body changing. I think it was for me under fueling for that amount of time. And then getting back into heavy intense training, honestly, probably building my training up too quickly from there as well, and not kind of taking the time that I need to be gentle with my body. I got a sacral stress fracture. I ended up really struggling with it because I thought I had never had an injury before. It was my first injury I've ever had. I thought you needed to cross train like 5 hours a day. So that's what I was doing. I actually lost weight cross training, which is hard to do. But when you're cross training that amount of time in a day, it's really hard to feel. And I had been working on my nutrition. I had been really cognizant. And I was like trying to keep track of making sure I didn't get too small. So I was like, what is happening? Why can't I keep weight on? And it's like, when you're cross training 5 hours a day, that's like insane. Like, looking back, I'm like, and sorry, not to say it's insane, but I just don't think it's necessary. I think my body was telling me I'm hurt, that I need to recover. So to go from that place to then saying, I want to try to get as much fitness as I can so that I can come back faster. I think as runners, we look and we're like, we don't want to lose fitness, or we want to feel like we can come back quicker. But it's like, no, that's actually counterintuitive to what our body needs. Our body is telling us, hey, you pushed yourself too hard. You're not recovering enough. You're getting like, this is why this bone injury happened. And I had 3 months of cross training too hard. I got a follow-up MRI. It showed no signs of healing. So they're like, you now need to take 3 months off. So I took 3 months completely off of running, then started cross training and then to running. And then like 2 months later, I got another sacral stress fracture. And I think it was also because I had taken that amount of chunk of time off, and I built my miles from like 0 to 80 in like a month, which was dumb. And I'm like, something like that, where it's like, again, I was like, I let my bone heal. And it's like, yeah, but look at the ramp up. Like, that's so silly. Like, why did you give yourself, like, you felt like you learned your lesson, but you didn't really. So then I got another one. So that was, a brutal awakening.
So hard.
But then I learned a little bit better about my approach, and was really gentle. I was like, I took, I think, a month totally off, and just like focused on like feeling happy, healthy, doing things to take my mind off of running. But I also made sure I was eating. Like, I also think sometimes when it's hard for runners and athletes, when you're not doing what you want, it's like you sometimes forget, or like you're like, well, I don't need to eat as much because I'm not training. And it's like, no, your body's still healing itself. So actually you need to be cognizant of that. And then I ended up having, I think because of that, I took a slow approach. I got my miles up to 60. We kept them at 60 to 65. We're like, we just like aren't going to try to go higher than that. And I think that is what helped me, is that I didn't try to do some silly ramp up. I like really, really scaled back, really was very gentle with my comeback and just let my body heal and recover. And then when you do that, like you can run really well. And I was able to run really well.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm like, that was good. But then I'm like, I feel like I had some other injuries along the way. I look back the next, it's funny. I'm like, I feel like I learned this hard, like this lesson a bunch of times, but, talking about fueling as well, the next year was doing these long runs. Like I was running like 20 to 22 miles, which is more than I'd ever done. And I wasn't taking any fuel on those runs. And I got another stress fracture. Mm-hmm. So again, it's like, I feel like it's so, to me, I'm like looking back, I'm like, why was I not having any fuel on those runs? And it was like, I was told because I wasn't a marathoner, I didn't need to get my gut used to it. But it's like, wait, but I'm still putting my body through this stress and now I'm so depleted. So I'm like, I learned those lessons. I feel like I learned a lot. And then I ended up having to get hip surgery. And that was probably the most my body changed, because I was on crutches for 2 months. I couldn't run for 4 months, or like couldn't start the Ultra G for 4 months. So it's like, I was really cognizant of fueling. And I also was doing DEXA scans to make sure my bones looked okay, all of this. And that was probably the most shocking to me, because my weight didn't shift that much. I think I gained like a couple pounds, but my muscle body fat percentage really shifted. And I had to be okay with that. And I had to say, this is normal. This is what happens. I was non-weight bearing for 2 months. And then I was like slowly walking. And I think that for me really helped with my mindset to say, this is okay. I don't want to try to make my body any other way. Like this is now like where I'm at. We're going to lift. We're going to just slowly get back to it. And it's like your body naturally gets to where it needs to go. Again, it's not going to happen overnight, but it doesn't have to. Like this sport too, I feel like we want these like quick fixes of like, now I'm like healthy. I need to get there now. Like I need to do this now. And it's like, no, like that's only going to harm you. And it's going to, like to your point, talking about injury cycle, like it kept me in this cycle where maybe like I was able to have a good performance here or there, but it's like I was learning that actually when I was gentle and slow and kind to myself and healthy, that I was able to have more success versus feeling like I was really trying to ramp up and then couldn't even showcase my fitness because I got hurt again.
Yes, that's so many important points to unpack there. That's just incredible insight to give. And I think the first key takeaway is like patience. The purpose of downtime from injury is not to get fit. It's not to prevent loss of fitness. It's to heal. And if you're trying to cross train 5-6 hours a day, you're really taking away from your body's resources that will help you heal. And so obviously it's frustrating to deal with an injury. Most of the time they happen at an inopportune time. We're trying to get back for a season. So we're feeling stressed. That's just natural. We're going to feel stressed. We're going to feel behind. But if you push through it, like you said you experienced, that's kind of a quick path to getting re-injured, and then ending up, instead of taking 12 weeks, you're taking 24 weeks. You have to really like double your time off, and it's completely off. Now you can't do anything. And it's always something that athletes are like, oh, I wish I would have known that back at the beginning, and have to kind of learn the hard way. But that's also why we're talking about this now. It doesn't have to be that way. Don't focus on not losing fitness, not letting your body change, and instead focus on healing. And I love that you said you just accepted that your body shifted and you acknowledged like, okay, yeah, it changed, but that's normal. That's natural. Of course, that's going to happen when you go from running, you know, 80 miles a week or whatever you were running to not running for 3 months. You know, I'm experiencing that shift. I went from running 80 miles a week to running maybe 20 miles a week. And of course, my body's going to look different, but I'm not running 80 miles a week anymore. And so I shouldn't look like I'm running 80 miles a week anymore. But that is always a hard thing to accept.
Yeah. Totally. I know. And I'm like, I just still like, I don't know. I look at the culture too. And I'm like, there are some times where I'm like, I feel like it's shifting where it's like body positivity, but then other things where I'm like, no, I feel like we're still far off where it's like, you're trying to put yourself like into a certain mold. And I'm just like, I don't know. I really believe I'm like, again, if you give your body what it needs, it's going to reach that equilibrium. And I'm like, it'll get you to whatever you need. Like whatever you're asking of it, your body will allow you to do it. If you like are patient, give it the time, and you are kind to yourself.
Yes. And I love that you said you just let it kind of happen naturally. And anytime you go from not training to training, your body will naturally shift if you're giving it the fuel that it needs. And so also not riding the highs and the lows so hard, I think, is really important. Not getting so panicked when, you know, your body shifts up a little bit, and not getting so excited when it shifts down. Like, just knowing that your body is not meant to look the same your entire life. And especially as women, we have, like, probably every 10 years, our body is completely changing. Like, from your teens to your 20s, and 20s to 30s, and 30s to 40s, like, you're going to experience changes. And the more reactive you are to them, the harder it's going to be to settle in and take care of your body.
Yes, totally. And it's funny, I'm like, I was even talking this morning, like, on the, like, I ran with some gals, and we were talking about how even just, like, I'm gonna get my period in a couple days. So I'm like, I feel bloated. And I'm like, I don't weigh myself really anymore, but I just, like, my clothes fit a little tighter. And it's like, also that happens. Like, I know there's, like, a fluctuation. So I'm like, that's why I think it can be dangerous for there to be, like, a race weight that you're trying to hit. Cause I'm like, I have water weight now because I'm bloated, cause I'm, like, about to start my cycle. Like, that didn't mean I gained 3 pounds in, like, 3 days. Like, that's not right. what happened is my body is, like, getting ready to start my cycle. So it's like, there, I just feel like there's something that I don't know, I just really hate that race weight idea, because I'm like, I just think for women it's so counterintuitive, and, like, there are so many natural fluctuations that happen based on where you are in your cycle, or even time of day, or whatever. And I'm just like, I think it's outdated that I'm like, I just don't think it's helpful, because I'm like, again, like, it doesn't matter. I'm fit, I'm healthy, I'm gonna run how I'm gonna run. It doesn't, like, doesn't matter if I'm feeling a little extra bloated. Like, it's not the funnest feeling, but, like, but it doesn't, it's not that my weight all of a sudden changed and I need to be focused on, like, losing weight because whatever. Like, that's not helpful.
For sure. And most of the time when race weight is a factor in our mind, if we're panic trying to lose weight, the weight that you lose is your muscle glycogen, so your energy stores are depleted, and dehydration. Neither of those things is going to help you on race day. And yeah, your body, especially for women, hormones shift throughout the entire month. You're going to see your weight fluctuate throughout the month. Fluid retention changes. All of that is going to vary. But at the end of the day, that's not what's going to determine your fitness. It's your training and your fueling and what you're doing outside of that really, really matters. And I think you are a true testament to that. You just won the 2025 Outdoor Championships in the 10K, which was such an incredible race. Tell us what that was like for you to win that race. I think you had shared in an interview, 10 years prior is when you made the world team in the 10K. 10 years later, you're winning your first outdoor US 10K title. What did that mean to you? What was that like?
Oh, I mean, it's incredible. I just think, I'm like, as runners, we all work so hard. So, like, it's just really nice when you see it come together. Like, I've worked hard for a long amount of time, and, like, I've gone through, like, I've learned a lot. Like, I've gone through a lot of injuries. I've learned what not to do. I've gotten, I think, now just in a healthy place where I'm like, I feel confident in myself. Like, I feel strong. I feel fast. I feel fit. So I knew I was in really good shape, but I also am like, the US women are incredible. Like, I just feel like it's so hard. And it's like, at USA's, it's hard to win a race. It's hard to win a race in general. Like, I was talking to Max and I'm like, I don't even know how many races I've won. Like, it's hard as a pro to win a race. Like, it's just, there's so many good people that I don't know. I just am like, I never take for granted winning a race, whatever it is, because I feel like it's a special thing. It's a really cool moment. But for me, I think after having kind of some rough years and just being older, I think it's fun to come in. And I obviously love seeing, like, I mean, that 16-year-old kid who's, like, insane in the 800, like, yeah, he's a phenom. Like, that's incredible. That's amazing. Like, props to you. But it's also fun to just be like, yeah, you can be getting better when you're older too. Like, you don't have to count yourself out. Because you're not 22. Like, yes, I'm like, these 22-year-olds are great and they can be competing too, but I'm like, I think the messaging that we tell ourselves is so impactful and powerful and how we're able to perform. So I just feel like changing that narrative and saying, I know I'm fit, I know I'm healthy, I know I'm ready. I don't know what place I'll end up, but I know I'm going to try my hardest and see what that'll get me. But for me, when I was in college, I, like, dreamed of winning a US title. I'm like, I feel like since I went to my first USAs, and I'm like, when I was a junior, I was fifth. And I think that in my head, I was like, oh, I'll get there soon. And it's hard. It's really hard to do. So I'm like, I feel like it took me, I mean, yeah, until I'm 35 to win one. And I'm like, I just am really happy. Cause I'm like, I also am like, if I never won one, I don't think it would take away from my career or who I am or anything. But it's just fun to break the tape and to feel like all that hard work I've had over years was able to kind of culminate into a really good moment.
Yeah, that's such good insight. And I feel like the people in general, like I know runners appreciate being able to accomplish a lifelong dream, but truly thinking about winning at that level, like I don't think people often understand or appreciate how much goes into that. You know, like I hate on the broadcast when they're like coming out of nowhere. I'm like, nobody comes out of nowhere. Everyone has been working their ass off for years and years and years to get here. And they've been doing all the right things with their fueling, with their strength training, mentally having to stay focused and having that goal kind of slip away year after year is hard. It's really hard on you physically and mentally. And honestly, races are about everything coming together at the right time. Like, honestly, I think half of having a good race is just like the luck of the day. Like, if everything is going to come together the way that it's supposed to, you have this incredible race, and it's so hard to repeat those things as time goes on. And just like really taking in that moment, I think, is so important in the sport. And I think a lot of runners tend to achieve a goal and then immediately like, what's next? And I just personally think it's so important to take some time and appreciate like that it all came together when it was supposed to. And, you know, I love that you said you felt like earlier in your career, you thought it would happen earlier. I think another thing runners often struggle with is how to stay motivated when that goal feels like it's not happening. Like, how did you personally kind of pivot your goal to not be so outcome driven and focus more on doing all the little things to, like you said, show up and be the best version of yourself that day, despite the outcome?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think like part of why we do this is like, I still want to push myself. I want to see how fast I can be. But I also think for me in my career, it's kind of, I feel like there's so much of like grinding and feeling like, oh, I have to do this. And like, then it puts so much pressure on the races, which aren't that often. Like, honestly, 99.9% of time is not racing. So it's like, if you are hating that 99.9% of the time, and then you go race, like odds are the race isn't going to go great, because I'm like, you're not having fun while you're doing it. And like, that just sounds like emotionally and mentally taxing. And I think for me, it's reminding myself that like, I love doing this. I'm like, I love getting to spend time with my friends, with my husband while I'm doing this, chasing my goals, seeing what it'll be. And I just have to also be confident and happy with the fact that I did what I could, and that it's like, that'll be what it'll be. And I said, like, was talking to my coach before the race, and I'm like, I feel really happy because I had a good build. I was really enjoying it. I feel like I'm in a good headspace, but like, maybe I'll end up eighth. And like, that's totally okay. And like, I'm fine with that. Like, obviously we go there because we want to make a team, you want to win. But it's like knowing that if you know you did everything you could, that it's like, it's okay. And to your point, it's like things, the stars do kind of have to align. I don't think that takes away from the hard work we do to say there is a little bit of luck that goes into it. Yeah. Like, I'm cognizant when I meddled, like, I don't think saying there's a little luck that went into it doesn't take away from me accomplishing that at all. Because it's like, I worked really hard. I put myself in a position to be there. But I'm like, again, the stars kind of have to align. And anyone doing this at this level, like, we are all talented and we all work hard. So I also think, for me, I'm like, it's acknowledging that and knowing that like everyone on that starting line is talented. Everyone on that starting line is working really hard. So like, I don't like, I love people who are saying, they're like, you really deserve this. And I'm like, that's so nice. But I'm like, I don't know if like anyone deserves it. You know what I mean? Like, we all deserve it. Like, no one does, but we all do. Like, we're all putting in so much work that like, I think like, we all are just trying to get the best out of ourselves and to enjoy it along the way. And I'm like, for me, having good people in my corner and just knowing that, like, this is also not a forever thing in my life. So I just want to make the most out of it and, like, to feel like I'm having fun, and that if I know I'm showing up prepared, that I won't have regrets whether I'm first or second or last or whatever.
Yeah. And speaking of showing up prepared, one of my favorite things is your interview after the race. You're talking about how you were using ChatGPT to track your carbs. So tell us a little bit about why that was so important to you and why you feel like that was so helpful in this win.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I'm like, again, I'm not someone who wants to count calories. Like, I remember, yeah. This is like a tangent, but I talked at this high school cross country camp, and this made me really sad. This mom, her daughter was gaining weight, and she was like, how do you know how many calories to eat? We're trying to track. And I was like, I wouldn't try to track to like eat. I make sure you're fueled, make sure you're healthy, make sure you're this or that. So like, I also want to preface that I'm like, I do think sometimes it can be triggering to people if they're like tracking calories or whatnot. And I'm like, so for me, I'm like, I honestly don't even care. I don't know the calories I'm consuming. I know the macros I need. And I know that like, I'm eating enough. And I'm like, I think that's what's more important is like, I don't think I need to hit a certain like whatever, 3,500 or 4,000 or 2,000 or whatever it is. It's like, I think I know when I am training hard and I'm glycogen depleted, I'm like, I am at altitude on my double days, like double workout days, I'm trying to get 550 in. And it's hard. Like, it's honestly like, that's why I like started to track, because I was like, how much am I getting in? Coach Milt is like a big proponent. He's like, I want you to be having carb drinks during your workouts and like, make sure that you're getting a good amount in, make sure that you get protein and carb immediately after. And he also is, and I love it, because I'm like, I feel like the Rice Krispie treats are like a big thing now, but like, he told me that he's like, go to Costco, get a big thing of Rice Krispie treats. Like, if you eat a few of those after, like, you're gonna, like, that'll help replenish your carbs. If you're having a carb drink during your session and you have your protein shake and you have like two or three Rice Krispies, you feel like you are ready to go until you get your meal. And I'm like, yeah, that's actually so smart. And it's so easy because it's so much cheaper than other stuff on the market. Yes. So I'm like, I don't know, it's like an easy hack. But I also did it for me just to, in the lead-in, because I'm like, sometimes when we're tapering, you're not as hungry. And I'm like, I wanted to make sure that I was getting in enough. And again, it's not marathon training, so you don't have to be like super conscious of carb loading. But I think it's still like any distance event, you want to make sure that your glycogen stores are not depleted, to your point going into it. And like, I wanted to make sure my hydration was there because I knew it was going to be like hot. So I was really trying to make sure I had enough electrolytes in my system, that I was being conscious of that, and on my carbs while I'm like training hard at altitude. But even when I scaled back for my kind of like taper leading in, I was like, I wanted to make sure that I didn't cut stuff out because I'm not training as much. I was like, I actually wanted to make sure that I'm still meeting these goals so that I don't show up to the race depleted, because I'm like, I'm not all of a sudden not at altitude. I don't need to be eating as much. And it's like, that's, I think, a fallacy, is that like, yes, you need to make sure that you're keeping those stores up going into a big effort. And I just found that helpful, because it's like, it's easier for me to be like, I had whatever, like a yogurt and granola and a ham and cheese sandwich and two bagels with jam. And then we had pasta, and then I had Annie's mac and cheese, and like, then I had rice and steak and a salad with beets for dinner, like whatever it is. And I had like a Morton 320 and then my protein shake, and like ChatGPT was just like boop, 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 boop. And for me at altitude, it's really nice. Like, I did it on Tuesday too, to be like how close am I to my goal? I was trying to hit like 500 to 550 on Tuesday for my sessions. And it was like, you're at 408. Like, have you had dinner yet? It's like really funny. And it's like, what are you planning to have the rest of the day? And I just, for me, that's more helpful. Like, I don't know, it might be hard for some people, but I just thought it was nice to have that reassurance and for it to like list out like, okay, I met my protein and my carb goals. And I don't really care about like the other stuff, because I know I'm eating enough. Like, if I'm hitting those macros and like I'm having well-balanced, like my vitamins are great. And like, I'll take vitamins to make sure I kind of like get those extra things if I feel like I'm eating more Rice Krispie treats and less whatever else. But I'm like, I also think that's more important than making sure I'm eating a big bowl of spinach.
For sure. And I think that's important to think about with tracking. This is not either of us telling people to start tracking. I think that's an important thing to remember. No one's telling you to track, but I think in this situation, you're using it for good instead of for evil, and you're not using it as something to limit. I think when people use tracking, it's because they're like, well, I don't want to overeat, so how can I make sure I'm not overeating? And then that gets away from you, because that tracking may or may not be accurate to your needs. It might be leading to underfueling and you just don't realize. So instead, knowing what your needs are and then understanding, what does that look like? How close am I to hitting those needs? Do I need more? And if you go over, that's okay, but it's more like you're not using it to limit yourself. You're using it to understand, what does it actually look like to hit my goals? And I love that carbs are just such an emphasis for you. I've said this before, I say this all the time, carbs should be the most important thing you focus on as runners. You might be the only runner I've ever heard hitting your carb needs, and that's just, you also just won a US title. So let's think about that connection and how that got Emily to the top and allowed her to stay there. And I love that you said it's also in the taper week, like not underfueling in the taper week. You're so right. I think a lot of people are like, oh, I'm training less, so I should be eating less. Well, no, your big race is coming up. You want to make sure those energy stores are topped off and you're ready to go. And I think that's so amazing that you shared that. And it's funny, it started this like ripple effect on social media. I've seen a lot of people talking about like hitting their carbs, and I just love that you're being a positive influence in this space over more carbs, not less. So thank you for spreading that message.
Yeah, I love it. And it's just like everyone's happier, right? Like carbs are good. I'm like, yum.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. I know, that's like my favorite foods are carb foods.
Yes,
totally. Yes. Well, before we get into our rapid fire questions, I just want to wrap up. You know, you've transitioned from different coaches, different teams, different sponsors, and it seems like right now you are the happiest and healthiest version of yourself. So what can you speak to in terms of finding that environment that allows you to flourish? What really allows you to be the best version of yourself on and off the track? And any advice you could give to other athletes trying to find that?
Yeah. I feel like this is something I've talked to a couple people about this recently, like friends, where I'm like, I think it's okay to also know that things change, that you change, and that doesn't mean, like, it could mean that a situation worked for you. And if it doesn't seem like it's working for you and you are going to leave, it doesn't mean that like, I don't know, it's bad or whatever, or like there's any bad blood. It's just you acknowledging that, like, hey, I don't feel like I'm getting what I need. I need a transition. I need something different. And I also think, like, as runners and athletes, sometimes we just need new stimuli. And I'm like, I was with Bowerman and Jerry for so long, and I'm like, I accomplished a lot under him and with that group. And then it just wasn't serving me. Like, I was struggling. I wasn't as happy. I don't feel like I was performing as well. I feel like I was getting in my head with the comparison game of some of my teammates. So I went off on my own and was working with John Green, and he's great. And he's wonderful. He's like an awesome demeanor. And he was like a great person for me to kind of to figure out that transition with leaving Bowerman and figuring stuff out. And we were teammates, which was fun for a bit. And I'm like, I think it made me realize too that I'm like, I also feel like there's people you meet in your life, and it's like, just if you're not on the team anymore, it doesn't mean, like, I don't know, you guys don't like each other, or there's bad blood, or there's something. It's just like, I think I need something different. And for me, it was learning in my career what I feel like I've needed in different chapters of my life. And I think the hardest transition for me was probably that Bowerman transition. And I really struggled with that because I had known it for so long. And looking back, it's like, I just think, again, I'm so happy I stayed because I ended up meeting my husband, like, when I was still there. Like, there's so many good things that came out of it. But I do think it's just hard as an athlete to be like, to make a big change. And I'm like, again, I don't think people should be making changes all the time. I think you should kind of give yourself some time to adapt. But I'm like, just learning that it's okay to make a change. Yeah. And that, like, it's fine for you to know kind of what you need. And for me, like, also in this chapter of my life, like, I'm married, and like, my husband has a job, and he trains with me a lot when he can. But like, and he'll come to altitude with me. But also, like, I want to be with him. And I, like, we have friends in Portland, and I love my network there. And like, we have like a place in Flagstaff. So just knowing for me, like, where I feel most comfortable and confident in, and I feel like I have that network around me, I think has been really beneficial for me. And honestly, having him for a lot of this, like, I sometimes I don't run with him, like, I don't want to go on his schedule, but a lot of times he is able to, like, change his schedule, or we'll go after work, or we'll go early in the morning before work. And that's been nice for me to feel like I have that. But also that doing stuff on my own, I'm like, I like it. And I feel like even if I'm running on my own, if I don't have people to link up with, I have like a really good network of friends and people that I'm like, my life is full outside of running. And I think for me, for so long, I was like, my network has to only be this one thing. And like, if I don't run with people, I won't see people during the day. And it's like, what, like, why? I have all these good friends and people, and like, so many friends that have babies now, and it's like hanging out with their kiddos and stuff. And it just feels to me like I love running, but I love my life, and I like having a full life.
Amazing. Yeah, loving your life outside of running will only help you love running even more. That's such good advice. And for anyone who doesn't know, Max, Emily's husband, has what's his streak now? How many years?
Oh yeah, it's over. He just hit 10 years in February, but he was he's a college swimmer, and then started this run streak. But yeah, he's run at least a 5K every day for 10 and a half years, which is insane. Yeah.
That's insane. Yeah. Like, so great training partner.
Great training partner. But also, I'm like, it is funny because I take a day off every Sunday. So it's also like, he says that to me too, where he's like, we do different things. Like, what you are trying to accomplish versus what I am trying to accomplish is different. And like, he wants to help me along the way. And he has goals for sure. But it's like, I know I have to take a day off every week. Like, that's what's working for me. That makes sure that I have my recovery and whatever. And like, that's okay. Like, I don't need to be running every day because he is. So.
Yeah, that's so important too, to think about. Like, run strengths aren't for everyone. I've never had a run 10 streak in my life. I've always taken a day off, and that's what works well for me. So do what's best for you and put yourself in an environment that allows you to do that, I think is such great advice. And we're just so excited to be cheering for you. Keep our fingers crossed for Tokyo, that we'll be cheering for you at Tokyo. But either way, it was so amazing to see you get that win after so long and just spread such positive messages around fueling. So thank you for all that you do. And I'd love to wrap up with our fun rapid fire questions if you're ready.
Yes, perfect.
Okay. So the first question is, what is your go-to pre-run snack?
Oh, a cinnamon raisin bagel with peanut butter and honey.
Yum. I love a cinnamon raisin bagel.
So good.
What would you pick for your last meal?
Oh, my last meal. I love ribs. I would probably do like ribs with probably some sort of like creamy polenta or like some sort of rich, like, I like mashed potatoes maybe, but like some sort of, I don't know, grits or something. And then like a brownie hot fudge sundae.
Yum. That sounds amazing. What is your favorite dessert?
Oh, we're an ice cream. We went to Dairy Queen last night. I'm on a hot fudge sundae kick, just like a simple vanilla with hot fudge. The best.
I love a Dairy Queen hot fudge sundae.
They're so good.
So good. What is your least favorite food?
Oh, I don't know. Max is like, he's like, there's nothing you don't like. I'm trying to think. I really like most things. I'm like,
amazing.
Yeah.
That's great. That makes it easy.
You can eat anywhere. Yeah. I like weird things too. Like, I'm like, if there's something weird where he's like, that sounds gross, I'm like, I want that. Like, just, yeah. I don't know where that comes from, where I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. Like, when amazing. I was 9, I was like, escargot's on the menu. I'm getting that.
Oh my gosh.
My sisters were like, why? And I was like, I don't know, buttery snail, yum.
Just a weirdo. Buttery snail.
Yeah.
Amazing. Wow. So you'll eat anything. That's great. Yeah, you're an easy guest, a house guest to have for dinner.
Yeah. I like that, like something super spicy, like those hot peppers that, like, I don't know, or like the hot wings challenge. I can do some spice, but I don't want the like ultra
hot. Much.
Yeah,
for sure. That's fair. Yeah. If you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience, where would you go?
Oh, I mean, honestly, Tokyo. I'm like, I'm thinking about that. I'm like, I guess I went to Japan before, and I just thought the food was so good. And I'm like, I love sushi. I love nigiri. Like, I love the rice and fish, just simple, but so good. And like the sushi rice is just better than like other rice. And I feel like there it's better than here. It's just so good.
Agreed. Well, again, fingers crossed you get to go and have some food in Japan.
Yes.
What is your go-to lazy meal?
Oh, Annie's mac and cheese with, like, we add blood Greek yogurt and then maybe some like chicken or something in there, but it's like a little Greek yogurt, butter. I don't know. It makes me feel like I'm like, okay, I'm adding a little extra protein in here. And it's just so creamy when you add the like the Faye full fat Greek yogurt. I'm like, so good.
Ooh.
And just easy.
I might have that for dinner tonight. That sounds really good. Amazing. That's a great tip.
Yeah.
And then the last one, what is your favorite coffee or tea drink?
Oh, I'm like an Americano girl. I'm like, I don't know. I like an Americano with like a sweet treat. Like, I'm like caveat it with that because I'm like, I don't like a coffee on its own. I'm like, if I have a coffee, I want like a little pastry or something.
Agreed. There's no better combination.
Yes.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being here today, Emily. Where can people find you if they want to keep up with you?
I'm just my name on Instagram, Emily Infeld, my TikTok that I'm kind of starting. Ooh. That's terrible. If you want to see like stuff that's on Instagram or stuff that's like, I don't know, whatever, just follow me there. Just those two.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. We'll be cheering for you this season.
Oh, thanks, Maddie.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to keep up with Emily, you can find her on Instagram at Emily Infeld, as well as on TikTok. If you'd like to cheer for her in the upcoming World Championships, Emily will be competing in the Women's 10K on day 1 on September 13th, and it should be broadcast somewhere on NBC or Peacock, although I can't promise for sure. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.